Last week, the government put its gambling ad reforms to Parliament. And straight away, everyone's unhappy. The Greens and Coalition say it doesn't go far enough. The industry says it goes too far. The Prime Minister says it's all about balance.
We are getting the balance right. Letting adults have a punt if they want to. But making sure that our children don't see betting ads everywhere they look. Because we don't want kids growing up thinking that footy and gambling are inextricably linked.
That link is what I want to dig into. Because sports betting is now the fastest growing form of gambling in the country. About 1 in 10 Aussie men have had a punt on a game or a race. And experts say that's no coincidence. Strength, competitiveness, bragging rights, they're baked into sport and they're baked into gambling too. So today, let's look at how betting got so tangled up with our love of sport and our ideas about masculinity and whether there's any way to untangle it. I'd love to hear from you on this, if gambling's changed the way you engage with sports or with your mates. And you're about to hear from a researcher who's been exploring the relationship between sports, gambling and masculinity. But first, I want to introduce you to Mark Kempster. These days, he's with the Alliance for Gambling Reform, but he really knows about this firsthand. Mark, thanks for joining me this morning.
No, anytime, mate. Thank you.
So I said before, 1 in 10 Australian blokes had engaged in some sort of sports betting. How old were you when you placed your first bet? Do you remember?
Would have been 14, 15 years old, I reckon, at the local pub back in the mid-2000s. Would have been around that time and probably revolved around the local playing with my mates in the local footy club and places like that. So, yeah, pretty young when I started my journey on gambling, which ended up in a horrible spot.
Yeah. I mean, only tell as much as you're happy to. But it kind of escalated from there.
Oh, yeah, certainly. So, yeah, I went through a horrible addiction from probably 18 till I was 32. So, yeah, good 10 to 12 years of my life I lost to an addiction. And through those really formative years in my 20s, which I'm not going to get back, which is probably more important to me than the money I lost at least $100,000 across that time. It's definitely more, but I don't want to go back and do all the sums on it. But, yeah, to me, the time it's taken away from me from other things in my life and the experiences I've missed out on because of it is just as important. So yeah, it really affected me mentally and physically and still affects me to this day and things I do in my life.
When did you know it was a problem?
Pretty early on. I thought I had it under control for, say, the first couple of years, but then once we had the proliferation of sports betting apps coming on our smartphones in the late 2000s is when it really took off for me. And then, yeah, within a couple of years, I knew I had a serious problem, but I hid it for a good eight or so years after that because I didn't really want to tell anyone. I thought I was going to be judged and ostracised if I did bring up anything to do with my gambling, so I hid it for a really long time, and that took a huge toll on me as well as, like I said, the money lost. It's the mental toll it took on me across that time.
That idea of stigma and hiding it is something I definitely want to come back to, Mark. Also here with us is Rowan Irving, who's a research fellow in young men's digital health at Flinders University. He's one of the ABC's top 5 humanities residents for 2026. Rowan, listening to Mark's story, how familiar is that to you?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, especially Mark's point about the introduction of sports betting apps around that 2008 mark, that kind of turned what was a kind of obscure gambling activity into something that was massively widespread, and the amount of advertising that we saw accompany that kind of digital revolution, I think has left a lot of people in a really tricky spot where sports betting and sport are deeply linked and a lot of gambling harm can occur as a result.
Like you say, Rowan, it's a pretty recent rise. Why has it been able to become so embedded in male culture in such a short time?
Look, I think there's a couple of things. One is the introduction of the smartphone. And so what was this, activity that sometimes men would do at the pub together can now kind of happen anywhere at any time and it becomes more kind of ingrained. But the big one in terms of male culture has been the advertising that we've seen. Most of the ads that we see over the past 15 years around sports betting, they do a lot of work to position it as a kind of normalised, taken-for-granted activity among young men. We see a lot of kind of blokey representations of guys at the pub having a laugh, betting on sports, and what that does is really build these ties between ideas of Australian masculinity and sports betting.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. I'm talking to Rowan Irving, who's a research fellow at Flinders University in young men's digital health, and Mark Kempster, who has lived experience with gambling harm. He's now an advocate for the Alliance for Gambling Reform. And I'm interested to hear from you on how gambling and sport interplay for you. My number's 0418 226 576. David says, I can't stand gambling and no longer watch NRL or most free-to-air TV simply to avoid the absolute bombardment of ads. Well, Rowan, the reforms that have been announced will pull back on the number of ads that are going to be out there. There's going to be a ban on gambling ads in sports venues and players' uniforms, restrictions around ads on TV during certain periods. Do you see that helping to shift that culture?
Look, in a word, no, not really. I think the worry with these reforms is that they are partial bans, and most of the evidence shows that when you enforce a partial ban, it doesn't actually reduce the amount of wagering ads that we see. The wagering industry will still find, you know, different pockets, different areas to push their product. And, you know, to your listeners' text there, if they remain frustrated with seeing betting ads on the NRL, it's not like that will change as a result of this legislation.
I should say we reached out to Responsible Wagering Australia about this, with the peak body for sports betting companies in Australia. They argued that Australia has one of the most tightly regulated gambling markets in the world. Broadly speaking, the industry says it feels the current legislation goes too far, while the research and advocacy sector believes it doesn't go far enough. Rowan, can the government find a middle ground here?
Well, I mean, you're speaking to a researcher, so I probably agree with the latter camp that it doesn't go far enough. I think the issue with finding a middle ground on this topic is that often a middle ground doesn't work, as I said before, in reducing gambling advertising. But if you think back to tobacco advertising reforms, we didn't really accept a middle ground there. And if the cigarette industry came out and said we'd like to put on, you know, 3 tobacco ads an hour before 8:30 p.m. and then unrestricted tobacco ads after that, I think most people would rightly be outraged. But because of the political influence that the gambling lobby has alongside the sporting codes and the media companies that benefit from gambling ad revenue, all of a sudden we're kind of supposed to accept a middle ground in this argument.
You're really telling me a lot of stories on the text line. Tina says, years ago when our children were young teenagers, my husband and I took our children to a country race match. We gave them $5 a race to bet with the bookies, a few wins and a few losses. They mostly lost it all. It was a teaching moment. Neither of them have bet since. Whereas Jane says, my stepfather was a gambler. Every cent I earned as a teenager working part-time went to his addiction of not only gambling, but alcohol and cigarettes. I know firsthand the devastation it caused our family. It should not be advertised on TV. So pretty big differences there in that family experience. And another text says, I'm glad someone is here to answer the question, what is it with men? Rowan, taking a pretty broad approach to that question, what do we know about men and gambling? What proportion of them are the main gamblers? What do we know about it?
Well, I mean, you know, different forms of gambling see different gender makeups in Australia, right? So gambling on pokies and gambling on the lotto and things like that, it tends to be a pretty even gender split. With forms of wagering like race betting and sports betting, that's much more male dominated. And there's a few reasons for that. Some of it is, you know, arguments around men liking to display skill and, you know, show that they're kind of aware of what's going on at a footy game to place a bet on. But a lot of it's kind of historical factors as well. Like through the 19th and 20th centuries, horse racing and greyhound racing in particular were kind of guarded as male activities, and there were concerns around women gambling, and betting spaces like public bars and racetracks weren't always particularly welcoming to women. So you kind of see these colonial legacies that endure and result in almost 9 out of 10 regular sports bettors today being men.
Mark, how did that show up for you in the sort of footy club culture?
Oh, that's where I feel my addiction really started. And it wasn't anything that the club did per se, but there's a culture of gambling in all sporting clubs across Australia, and every one I've ever been to. You have punters clubs and all these other little things, syndicates and gambling syndicates and the like that go on at these places. So they may not, a lot of clubs don't feel like they're doing anything wrong, but when you build this culture that's built around socialising that involves gambling, then if you're there as a young man like I was, then it's kind of just what you believe. believe is the norm, and you go along with it because you don't want to be the odd one out in that group, and you don't want to put yourself out there in the masculine group and male environment. So it definitely led me down the path of addiction. I don't blame it at all, but it definitely had a huge say in the way where I turned out, I believe.
What did that mean for you when you tried to pull back from it then, Mark?
Oh, like I stopped playing sport, and I stopped playing sport because I just wanted to gamble more on the weekends, basically. But I've had to stop. My love of sport is basically gone. Like, and that sucks because I grew up loving my football, loving basketball and cricket, and I very rarely try. When I do watch sport, I watch it on delay these days because I want to try and avoid all the ads, or I don't watch it at all because I don't want to put myself in those places. And then you've got to also take yourself away from some social environments. Like, I've missed out on weekends away with, like, Bucks weekends or party weekends where my friends have gone away and they've gone to the races because I don't want to put myself in those situations. So, it's a really difficult place we find ourselves in, especially with young men who are being targeted by these ads. It shows you in these ads they want to make you believe that it's such a cool, normal social thing to do when we know it's not the case, and I know it's not the case, and so many others know it's not the case, and because of the harm it causes.
That's such a loss, Mark. Like, social connection, Rowan, we hear all the time that social connection is really important, especially for men. The places where they often get it are like gatherings with their mates, sports. They're good for you in so many different ways. And then this is sort of, especially for people like Mark, is undermining it.
Massively. I mean, as a personal story, I was at my footy club the other day and it was a Saturday afternoon. There were AFL games on, but because the club didn't have a KO subscription, the games weren't on free to air, and there was horse racing on the TVs in the clubhouse instead of footy at a footy club. And I thought, yeah, this is really concerning, but it's the case for a lot of young guys, the spaces they inhabit, whether it's the pub that has a TAB section, the footy club where there's a lot of gambling going on or gambling being shown, it does kind of reaffirm these links between sports betting and masculinity.
So placing a bet with your mates at the pub, still a great big way that people are engaging with gambling in Australia, but now you can pull your phone out wherever you are to have a punt. Rowan, what has that meant for the space?
Well, it's made gambling harm a lot more prevalent. Obviously, if there are time and space restrictions on gambling, like gambling at a pub, harm is in some ways limited. But when you can have your phone on you all the time, obviously the propensity for harm is higher. But I think it's also kind of starting to shift the gendered nature of the practice as well. We did some research recently with young Australian men and their partners, right? And a lot of the stories that we expected to hear were, oh no, I wouldn't bet at home around my girlfriend because she wouldn't like it. And actually what came up in these stories was the amount that young men and women are kind of sharing in gambling activities at home. A lot of stories about men saying, oh, hey, would you like to pick a leg of my multi to get their partner involved in their betting practice? Or a lot of stories from women who are downloading a sports betting app themselves. Because as you say, the smartphone has kind of transitioned this practice beyond masculine betting spaces like the pub and into kind of previously thought of non-gambling spheres like living rooms and bedrooms.
So we did put this to Responsible Wagering Australia. In a statement, their CEO, Kai Cantwell, said, licensed online wagering providers have a unique ability to identify and support at-risk customers because they know who their customers are. They monitor behaviour in real time and can intervene before harm escalates. Rowan, do we know if that's happening at the moment?
Look, I wouldn't be confident about it. I think the problem with that statement is that it's expecting wagering industry bodies themselves to do the harm reduction activity, right? But the problem with these organisations is that they are profit maximising businesses that work within a profit business model, and their profit is derived from people's gambling losses. And a lot of their profit is derived from people who are experiencing gambling harm as they lose a lot of money. There's countless stories out there of people like Mark who, once they start losing money, they kind of become a VIP and they're encouraged to bet more through these gambling providers. So the expectation that these providers will be the one who will provide support and identify at-risk customers, I think, is really problematic.
Can you talk about that VIP thing?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of the stories that come out are, when men are winning money on betting apps, they get banned. But when they're losing a lot of money, they become VIPs. And all of a sudden, they have a client manager who will send them further inducements or free bets and things like that and encourage them to bet more. And so the idea that these companies will then all of a sudden be the ones to say, hey, bet less if you're losing money, kind of flies in the face of the evidence that we've seen over the past 10, 20 years.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. I'm talking to Rowan Irving from Flinders University and Mark Kempster from the Alliance for Gambling Reform about the government basically putting its gambling ad reforms to Parliament and the The narratives that have come out since then, I'm asking you how sports and gambling are intertwined in your life. Noel says gambling and big money have ruined sports. It shows in the terrible attitudes of professional athletes. Gabby says, I can't believe the PM is still using the line that not banning gambling advertising is protecting people's right to punt. Did banning alcohol or tobacco advertising stop people partaking? No. And one here for you, Mark. Good on Mark for his remarkable determination to stay away from gambling. Hard work. Mark, you're in recovery now, but it's still having this ongoing effect on your life, like you said before.
Oh, it is. Like, I've got to put things in place and not to keep me on the straight and narrow, I suppose, with my gambling. But that is taking things out of my life that I've enjoyed for so long. As I said, I love my sport, but I don't watch as much sport anymore because of the gambling ads we have through out every broadcast on every station. It doesn't matter if you try and avoid them, you can't avoid them. So you've just got to sometimes just not watch it and try and catch up in other ways. There's lots of different other places as well. Like, I used to love reading the newspaper on the weekends, I don't bother getting that anymore because of the gambling advertising through that. So all parts of life have had to change for me. And again, we shouldn't be at a point where we have to prioritise our mental health by not watching something else we love or not partaking in something else we love in our lives just because of the damage it could do, because we have the government, unfortunately, is prioritising the profit of these multinational companies over doing the right thing and protecting us. And especially with those VIP customer relations people as well, like the amount of young people who I counsel now who come to see me and have had awful stories coming out of these VIP customer relations officers that basically are incentivized to create gambling harm in people because they work on commissions a lot of the time as well is abhorrent. So those type of situations are causing so much harm across the country as well.
What would you like to see change, Mark?
A lot of things. the banning gambling advertising is an absolute must, and that out of the Murphy Report, that was the number one recommendation. There is no need for it, as some of your listeners have said there, that we don't need to advertise gambling just to get people to gamble. People can gamble either way, but we didn't advertise. We took cigarettes advertising away and people still smoked, and we took alcohol advertising away and people can still have a drink. So that's one of the absolute musts for me, and the other one would be getting rid of inducements. So things like bonus bets and deposit matches and these VIP relations officers who can incentivise loss to people, that's insidious. We shouldn't be having that type of thing happening. We wouldn't allow alcohol companies to call up people and offer free beers to people in alcohol recovery. We wouldn't allow cigarette companies to offer cigarettes to people suffering from lung cancer, things along those lines. And that's the same idea with gambling and VIP and bonus bet programs. So those type of things need to go. And again, that was in the Murphy Report as well. And she said at the time it needs to go immediately, and we're 3 years down the track and nothing's happened around that either.
Rowan, with respect to Mark and what he was just saying there, what do you make of the argument that the majority of the Australians who don't gamble shouldn't be penalised to protect those who do experience harm?
I think that's a frustrating argument in some ways. As one of your listeners kind of pointed out before, you know, often the argument is that they're trying to strike a balance between protecting people's right to have a punt and limiting problem gambling. But none of the legislation that's being discussed at the moment has any impact on a person's right to punt. And I think to frame it in that way, that it is somehow penalising Australian gamblers or non-gamblers, I think is, a little bit frustrating.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me today. Rowan Irving is a research fellow in young men's digital health at Flinders University. He's one of the ABC's top five humanities residents for 2026. Mark Kempstar is a lived experience advocate for the Alliance of Gambling Reform. And as I said, we did reach out to Responsible Wagering Australia for this. I told you a little bit of what they said in their statement just before, but you can read the whole statement on the Life Matters website later today. If this chat's raised issues for you, there is help available. The National Gambling Hotline is on 1800 858 858.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.